What does it mean to be in the shadow of God's wings? Welcome to The Good Word. Our theme for today is In the Shadow of His Wings, and it focuses on the experience of David. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Paul Dibdahl from the School of Theology. Let's talk about that protective side. And our lesson involves two things, the God being clothed under the shadow of his wings, and then also there's some aspects with David's, the unhappy side of David that we also have to deal with as well. But let's talk about that imagery, being under the shadow of his wings.
You know, Alden, as soon as that phrase came up, I was reminded that this week somebody sent me something by email that was quite interesting in that it was a little bit different. There was a, this was like some kind of an orphanage for animals or a nursery for animals where they take in distressed animals, and they received three little rabbits that had been orphaned. And they're just little tiny things. And so they put them together. They were not doing that well. And they happened to have a rock dove in that same place that has one foot missing. And it's been living there for a long time. And somehow the rock dove got to the same place where the little rabbits were, and they have pictures that they were sent. It was very touching, where this rock dove actually comes in and starts moving the little rabbits and covering them with its wings and cooing and just settling down. And according to the people there, that these little rabbits started doing much better. They actually started to thrive, that this dove, of all things, sat itself on the rabbits to keep them warm and moved them every now and then. And this went on for quite a few weeks until the rabbits were able to take care of themselves. So
that's amazing, you know. Story. Yeah.
And of course, there's the old story of a mother chicken hiding her little ones under her wings in times of danger.
Yeah, and of course, Jesus uses that image. Mm-hmm. How often would I have gathered, you see?
Yeah.
But I pondered about that that imagery. I'm not sure that it has ever really meant a lot to me. It's standard imagery in the Psalms.
Well, as one who grew up in hot places in the tropics, I can tell you shadow is worth more than money.
Oh, yeah, it is interesting. We think of under the wings often in connection with warmth, but it's the shadow that's the blessing.
Yeah.
And if there's a shadow there, you know that there is something beyond the shadow that's providing that for you also.
Even the shadow of the wings of an airplane works fine, which reminds me of another thing I saw where some lions came after a plane landed, some missionaries landed somewhere and these lions came and lay down all underneath the plane. They couldn't get back to their plane because the lions were under in the shade.
Oh, yes. Well, there are a couple of psalms that refer to this image, Psalm 63:7. I'd like to read for us just five verses in Psalm 61, which I think would set the tone for what this might mean to be from the psalmist's perspective. Psalm 61, verse 1, "Hear my cry, O God, listen to my prayer. From the end of the earth I call to you when my heart is faint. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for you are my refuge, a strong tower against the enemy. Let me abide in your tent forever. Find refuge under the shelter of your wings. For you, O God, have heard my vows, and you have given me the heritage of those who fear your name." Even though that imagery may not be directly, it is a very powerful one, where you think of just simply being safe in God's presence. Now, let's go to David's troubling experience. Out of the shadow of his wings, you might say, into great sin. Story is told in 2 Samuel 11 and 12, the story of Bathsheba. And maybe we should go there simply so that we can remind ourselves. I might mention here, just by way of background, that one of the things that features in the Old Testament, if there is anything worth supporting, it is punished by the death penalty. So you'll find each of the Ten Commandments, except the last one, specifies the death penalty for each one of those. Pick up sticks on Sabbath, you get stoned. You sass your parents, you get stoned. Now, those are the commands. What is amazing, however, that there's not a single instance in the Old Testament where the death penalty is actually meted out for adultery. Not a single one, which I find really quite fascinating.
Well, Alden, I wonder if you know, stoning is also a very interesting way of executing, because what it does is it makes it into a communal event. Mm-hmm. You know, in our culture, we're very sanitary about this. We designate one person to go and do the executions, but under that, if you were willing to make the accusation, you also had to be the person to pick up the stone, which I think is a fairly high standard. I wonder if that didn't help mitigate stonings.
Although you have some notable, the sense of the corporateness in the Old Testament is so contrast with ours. The story of Achan is your best example, where the one man's sin led to the defeat of the whole community. Mm-hmm. The only way that could be put right was to touch Achan and all of Achan's possessions. That you simply cannot explain that on an individualist basis. We've tried to. We say the kids are in it. That's why they were punished, but that doesn't help. They killed the animals. In our culture, we at least have an investment sale to sell off the wealth. But no, they burned it and destroyed the whole thing. But when you come to 2 Samuel 11 and 12, you have this amazing experience. And I don't know that I want to get into the question of who is guilty here. You have the king, and he carries an incredible amount of power. So I would have to put the major responsibility on David. He sets up, and he's one of his best fighters, Uriah. He sets up so that he can be killed. Bathsheba is pregnant, and David weeps because of the prophet's denunciation of what's going to happen to him. And he pled. When his pleadings were not answered and the baby died, David just cheers up, takes a bath, puts on clean clothes. That's where it ties in with our theme for the quarter. What do you say of that kind of transformation of thinking? What would you say about that? Is that still typical ours, or is that very much a cultural thing?
Well, certainly it's a cultural thing, at least partly. But David does seem, at certain times in his life, just astonishingly resigned to God's will. So on the one hand, he refuses to assassinate Saul before it's time. He just...
It's the Lord's anointed.
That's right.
Can't do that.
I won't do that. Shimei, who curses him and pelts him with stones, David says, maybe that's what's supposed to happen. And he just takes it. And and in a sense, this is another one of those indications where he prays, he fasts for the child's life, but when he hears word that the child is dead, he takes it as God's will somehow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a quality that David isn't callous, I don't think, here, but I think this is revealing something about his character in that way. And I suppose we could say personality and culture, all those cultural expectations. That's all part of it as well.
David was a great sinner, but he was a very honest man in admitting. I mean, I think of one of the best examples is when Abigail came out and rescued David from taking life of, I mean, he was really angry with Nabal. He was ready to wipe out everyone. And Abigail came running out with enough gift, and he said, wow, you saved me. Thank you very much. And so that kind of honesty is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd like to go from here to the famous psalm that has been written in connection with David's experience, and I would like for us to see if we can draw some parallel lines as to how his experience can affect us in our worship today. Psalm 51, have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love, according to your abundant mercy. Blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, cleanse me from my sin. Now, what's intriguing about this psalm is that if you look at the historical note at the heading of the psalm, that was written later. It's not necessarily a psalm which is directly reflecting David's experience. But as I read this psalm, and I would be interested from both of you from your pastoral perspective, as I read this psalm, there is nothing specific about David's sin, which means that it is a marvelous penitential psalm that could be fit in any situation. Now, Dave, I'm going to ask you as the senior pastor in our crowd here, how specific is it appropriate to get in the pastoral prayer when you know there's sin in the congregation?
Well, my answer is not very specific. I don't see that there's anything to be gained by making public the private sins of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, are there any sins that are we are not acquainted with already? I mean, person to person, we are, sure. but as a category, there's really nothing new in the realm of sinning. Mm-hmm. I like to borrow the imagery of the Old Testament sanctuary, where morning and evening there was a general sacrifice for the sins of the people, and I almost think that that's what a pastoral prayer. Although I do agree with you all, I do think that we don't make enough of confession in our world today. That confession is a great therapy. And I don't just mean that in terms of personal relationships, but I think it's a spiritual therapy to acknowledge that you have done wrong and to grieve over it and to try to make amends and then to be restored is something that, yeah.
Now, we're going to probably we come to another lesson this quarter where we'll talk about this a bit more. But Dave, you've indicated that in your experience, a sense of your frailty, your sinfulness, was a key point in terms of your discovering a closer walk with God.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, when I read Ephesians 2 and saw there, Paul talks about how we are spiritually dead, we are enslaved by the world, the devil, and you know, our own flesh, and we are condemned. That's a pretty grim picture. Yeah. And I think it was as an adult when I first realized the full enormity of that I was very grateful. I was very inclined to pray to ask for a Savior and very glad to find one.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think that perhaps we probably ought to discover the Lament Psalms.
Yeah. But I have to say, Alden, in that moment, it was not a moment of the confession of sin. It was a moment of being overwhelmed by the plight.
Your plight.
Which is not tied to a specific sin, but to a circumstance. Yeah. So.
And I think that's really an important discovery to do that when we simply said that we were kind of hopeless.
Yeah.
And that certainly is the sentiment of Psalm 51, yeah. And again of yeah. David's experience.
But also I think that the shelter that was of a Savior at that moment was very important.
Thank you, Dave and Paul, for your help with our discussion. Next week, we go to Garments of Splendor, the experience of Isaiah. My thanks to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the good word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.